welcome to Alt Universe Top 40. My name is John McMullen. For the next hour, we will listen to some records, talk about chart positions, and make some good-hearted adjustments that time and taste demand. On today's installment, we will hear what happened when a California rock group with biker bar roots attempted to cover a soul song written by one of the legendary Motown songwriting teams. Later, for our little slice of heaven, we will listen to a blues standard by a mysterious Mississippi-born blues man that became famous as an Arkansas radio station host and wound up recording for a major record label as a result of an extremely odd contractual arrangement. Then, we will examine a song that is treated like an actual hit from the 80s by satellite radio and streaming services, but an investigation of its chart history clearly shows that it never made the top 40 in any country in which it was released. And finally, for our Hall of Perfection track, we turn our attention to the most familiar song from an album that spent one short week at number one and 11 weeks at number two, but was a bigger victory for the act that recorded it than their previous album that logged 18 weeks at number one. But first, just as we do every week, we have a song that at some point was perched at number 40. Some of these were on the way up, some were on the way down. Some hit number 40 for a one-week peak and then plummeted. What kind of number 40 do we have today? Well, we start with a guitarist from Canada that left the group The Guess Who at the height of its popularity to start a new band with his brothers called Brave Belt. And then a new bass player on vocals gave them a heavier sound. The members knew they needed a new name. Well, that name problem was basically solved at a steakhouse in Ontario when the band noticed a copy of the truck driver's magazine Overdrive sitting on a table. Bachman and C.F. Turner, that was the Canadian rock act Bachman Turner Overdrive with Let It Ride, a record that spent a week at number 40 on its way up to its number 23 peak, and then, oddly enough, spent another week at number 40 on its way back down.
Alt-Universe Top 40! Number 20.
From the 1979 Columbia album The Sound of Sunbathing comes this single by The Sinceros, which made an appearance at number 70 on the Australian singles chart, but did not chart at all in the United States. The Sinceros had a promising start during the early days of New Wave, with one of their live shows with Bruce Woolley, The Beat, and 2020 at the Palladium in New York being broadcast by legendary WNEW. But squabbles erupted, and by 1981, the Sinceros disbanded. Lead singer and leader Mark Kjeldsen played for a time with the Danny Adler Band, but left the music scene altogether and became a social worker. Sadly, he died in 1992. Keyboardist Don Snow joined the band Squeeze, replacing Paul Carrick when he left. Bassist Ron Francois joined the Teardrop Explodes and later worked with the Eurogliders. Drummer Bobby Irwin toured with Nick Lowe and Van Morrison before he, too, passed away in 2015. But while they were together, the Sinceros were mod and new wave at the same time. Now, on Alt Universe Top 40, with a song that, at the very least, should have made it up to number 20, here are the Sinceros and Take Me to Your Leader. Song that, at the very least, should have made it up to number 20, those were the Sinceros with Take Me to Your Leader.
This one went to 11.
My name is John McMullen, and this is Alt Universe Top 40. At number 11, we have a song written by the famous songwriting team of Holland Dozier Holland. Soul singer Kim Weston recorded this song for Motown in 1965, and it went as high as number 4 on the R&B survey and number 50 on the Hot 100. Then, in 1968, the Isley Brothers released their version, which didn't make the Hot 100, but did climb to number 22 on the R&B chart. Well, Tom Johnston of the Doobie Brothers had always loved Kim Weston's version, and he kept pestering the other guys in the band to cover it. They finally agreed, and apparently it took the California rock band a few tries to get it right. According to Doobie Brother Patrick Simmons, quote, "At first the band sounded like the Grateful Dead doing the Four Tops, but gradually it came together quite accurately," close quote. With a song that really did peak at number 11, those were the Doobie Brothers and Take Me in Your Arms.
Number 10.
Vocalist and guitarist Peter Bramall was in the British band The Motors, who were signed to Virgin Records in 1977. With solid support from their label, The Motors had four straight chart singles in England. Their vinyl release Airport even hit number 4 on the UK singles chart. Nevertheless, Peter was not happy with the direction of The Motors and left to form his own group, which included Mickey Broadbent on bass and keyboards and Keith Boyce on drums. For the band's name, they simply took Peter Bramall's stage name, Bram Tchaikovsky.
Something when he is
That originally peaked at number 37 on the Billboard charts, but is now at number 10 on Alt Universe Top 40. That was Bram Tchaikovsky with Girl of My Dreams.
Number nine.
Now we are up to a song that really peaked at number 9. It was written by Jerry Beckley when he was only 16 years old. Several years later, when Jerry was in the band America with Dan Peake and Dewey Bunnell, the trio recorded that song for their debut album.
We used to laugh, we used to cry, we used to bow our heads and wonder why. Now you're gone, I guess I'll carry on. You've left to me. I need you like the flower needs the rain. You know I need you. Guess I'll start it all again. Spring, you know I need you. I need you.
And every day I'd laugh the hours away, just knowing you were thinking of me. And then it came that I was put to blame for every story told about me.
I need you like the flower needs the rain. You know I need you. Yes, I'll start. Thank you.
with a song that really peaked at number 9. That was America and I Need You.
Number 8.
Here is a song that is definitely modern and certainly great. It was released by a San Diego-based reggae band consisting of members Billy David Milliken, Queen O. McKinney, Paul Kastick, Julian Tedelsky, Jackie Bertone, Othniel Campbell, Kyle McDonald, Dylan Kiwi, Lynn Copeland, Kevin Batchelor, and Annette Pradden. These 11 musicians are collectively known as the Billy David Band. Here is their song that should have made it up to number 8, Loving Revolution.
You're making your way and I'm making mine. We'll live together and be just fine. I'll sing songs and some dinners. We're living all together. It's a loving revolution. It's time.
Song that's both modern and great and should have hit number 8, that was the Billy David Band with Loving Revolution.
Alt-Universe Top 40!
Now we are up to our little slice of heaven at number 7. It is a single by Sonny Boy Williamson, and it is indeed a blues standard. To complicate matters a little, there are two different individuals who have made records under the name Sonny Boy Williamson. Blues historians have designated Chicago performer John Lee Williamson, who used the name Sonny Boy Williamson and made records between 1937 and his death in 1948, as Sonny Boy Williamson I. The legendary and mysterious Sonny Boy Williamson II was the vocalist and harmonica player Alex Miller, who was also known as Rice Miller and Little Boy Blue, before being named Sonny Boy Williamson by the sponsor of the King Biscuit Time radio show. Sonny Boy Williamson II was born under the name Alec Ford in Tallahatchie County, Mississippi, on a date that has never been truly established. He claimed at one point to have been born on December 5, 1899. However, David Evans, professor of music at the University of Memphis, has matched census information to establish that Alec Ford was 7 years old during the 1920 Mississippi census and that he was actually born in 1912. Oddly, Sonny Boy's record company believed his date of birth to be March 11, 1908, and years later placed that date on his gravestone. Regardless of the date of his birth, Alec Ford's mother's name was Millie Ford. Millie married sharecropper Jim Miller, and the young Alec began going by the name Alex Miller and began working for his stepfather. He loved the harmonica and became quite accomplished as an instrumentalist as he was growing up. As his confidence grew, he traveled Mississippi and Arkansas, playing for tips and entertaining juke joint patrons by putting one end of the harmonica in his mouth and playing it with no hands. During this period, he usually appeared under the stage names of Little Boy Blue or Rice Miller because of his love of eating rice with milk. It was also during this period that he became acquainted with and sometimes played music with Big Joe Williams, Robert Jr. Lockwood, Elmore James, and even Robert Johnson. It was in 1941 that Miller began hosting the King Biscuit Time radio show on KFFA, Helena, Arkansas. As Sonny Boy Williamson, he developed a following as he showed off his skills with the harmonica and his ability to entertain an audience. As his persona grew, and still as Sonny Boy Williamson, he later moved to radio station KWEM in West Memphis, Arkansas, and he blew a strong signal into urban Memphis, playing with his friends Arthur Big Boy Crudup and Elmore James. An amazingly well-connected blues man, Sonny Boy then married Howlin' Wolf's half-sister May. Although it is impossible to know for sure, some historians have even credited Sonny Boy Williamson, well, that is Sonny Boy number two, the one born as Alec Ford, with teaching Howlin' Wolf how to play the harmonica. In the early 50s, Sonny Boy began recording for Trumpet Records, a small Jackson, Mississippi record label that was in bad financial shape. In one of the oddest record deals in history, a trustee in Trumpet's bankruptcy case claimed Sonny Boy's small label contract as an asset and then awarded it to Trumpet's creditors, who, in turn, sold that piece of paper to Chess Records out of Chicago. Sonny Boy's records were then released sometimes on the Chess label and sometimes on the Checker subsidiary. During this period, his popularity grew, and throughout the remainder of the 50s and into the early 60s, he toured and recorded. In 1963 and 1964, he engaged in European tours based out of England, with several live recordings being made in the process. Sonny Boy liked the European fans, but his final tour of England ended abruptly. First, according to blues legend, he attempted to cook a rabbit inside the coffee percolator at his British hotel and ended up catching the hotel on fire. In addition, some historians have maintained that he also allegedly stabbed a man during a street fight in England, which caused him to leave immediately for the United States. Several months after that apparent touring disaster, Sonny Boy was back on the King Biscuit Time show in Helena, Arkansas. When he failed to show up at the radio station for his own show in the spring of 1965 one day, it was discovered that he had died in a rooming house, possibly from a heart attack. Like all the other mysteries in his life, though, even that was not firmly established. According to writer Robert Cochran, Sonny Boy Williamson II is buried near Tutwiler, Mississippi, with a headstone that contains an incorrect date of death and that date of birth that we previously mentioned that no member of Sonny Boy's family had ever used. Regardless of all the mysteries that surrounded Sonny Boy Williamson, one thing is certain. He could play harmonica, and he made great records.
You got to help me. I can't do it all by myself. You got to help me, baby. I can't do it all by myself. You know, if you don't help me, darling, I'll have to find myself somebody else. I may have to wash it, may have to sew, I may have to cook, I might mop the floor, but you help me, baby. You know if you don't help me, darling, I'll find myself somebody else. We'll be right back. Oh, baby, I can't do it all by myself. You know, if you don't help me, darling, I'll have to find myself somebody. Help me, darling.
With our little slice of heaven at number 7, that was Sonny Boy Williamson with his blues standard, Help Me. Since our last broadcast, we have been receiving reception reports from all around the world. Jan from Slovenia listened on 6070 kHz with a Texon S8800E and an active antenna. He reports 45534 and comments, "Nice music, but sometimes hard to get details because of the QSB." Well, thank you, Jan. Heimer from the Philippines heard the 7440 kHz broadcast on a web SDR out of the Netherlands. He wants to know if most of our music will be from the 70s and 80s in the future. Well, yes, Heimer, much of our music will come from the 70s and 80s, but we often get into the 60s for our Hall of Perfection tracks, and anything that we call modern and great is from at least 2000 or later. Thanks for the report and the question, Heimer. Shinichiru from Japan sent us a very detailed report after hearing us on 7440 kHz. He comments that he is very pleased to hear us and says thank you for the show. Well, thank you for listening, Shinichiru. Pavel from Russia heard the 7440 broadcast and reports 25242 on an ICOM ICR75 with 20-meter long wire. He says, thanks, excellent songs. Well, thank you, Pavel. And Igor, also in Russia, heard us on 7440 on an RPR7020 with a 7-meter long wire. He did this from a high-rise balcony. He reports 22332 with some interference. He wishes us great transmitting in the future. Well, we wish you the best as well, Igor. Can you hear us? If you can, please let us know. Send an email to john@altuniversetop40.com. We would love to hear from you.
This is Alt Universe Top 40.
Number 6.
Well, we just heard from Sonny Boy Williamson at number 7. Now at number 6, our bonus hit goes to an album act with an alleged connection to that mysterious blues man. Back in the mid-60s, Sonny Boy Williamson was on a European tour and even made a live album backed by a young British band known as the Yardbirds. Now, I can't tell for sure, but it does not appear that Jimmy Page was technically a member of the Yardbirds at the time. But according to rock and roll legend, it's another future member of Led Zeppelin that has the band's connection to Sonny Boy Williamson. And what is that connection? Stephen Davis, author of the book Hammer of the Gods, credits future Zeppelin vocalist Robert Plant with stealing one of Sonny Boy Williamson's harmonicas during that British tour. Well, a few short years later, and by now the leader of the Yardbirds, Jimmy Page invited Robert Plant to become the vocalist of the new Yardbirds, a band that soon changed its name to Led Zeppelin. With or without Sonny Boy Williamson's harmonica, here is Led Zeppelin with Going to California.
Spend my days with a woman unkind, smoke my stuff and drink all my wine. Made up my mind, make a new start, going to California with an aching in my heart. Someone told me there's a girl out there with love in her eyes and flowers in her hair. Chances on a big jet plane. Never let them tell you that we're all the same. was red and the sky was gray. One that had tomorrow could ever follow today. Mountains and the canyons started to tremble and shake. The children of the sun begin to wake. Watch out. They say she plays guitar and cries and sings la la la. Ride a white man in the footsteps of dawn, trying to find a woman who's never, never, never been born. Standing on the hill in the mountain of dreams, telling myself it's not as hard, hard, hard as it seems.
With a bonus hit at number 6, that was Led Zeppelin and Going to California.
Number 5.
Now at number 5, we have a band led by a singer-songwriter who has co-written songs for two artists we have previously featured on Alt Universe Top 40. Her name is Susan Jerome Taylor, and she co-wrote All That I Want for Robin Trower, released on his 1990 Atlantic album In the Line of Fire. She also co-wrote Just a Little Bit for Jimmy Davis and Junction back in 1987. And who was her co-writer for that track? The ever-present Jack Holder. Well, before all of that, Susan was the leader and lead vocalist of the new wave pop band, The Breaks. They released one album on RCA back in 1983. Two singles from that album were released, but they were unsuccessful. If RCA had only released this one, though, it certainly would have made the top five. Here are The Breaks with You Stole My Heart.
You're still the one for me.
with a song that surely would have reached number 5 had it only been released as a single. Those were The Breaks and You Stole My Heart.
Universe Top 40.
Back at number 11, we heard what could happen when a California-based rock band from the 70s covered a Motown selection. Now at number 4, we have a British new wave act covering a Stax song. Released on F-Beat Records in England, the song was an immediate hit and climbed all the way up to number 4. But in the United States, even though Columbia Records promoted it, the single was simply not a hit. As a consolation, though, the album that contained that song, Get Happy, did have success in the United States, reaching number 11 on the album charts. With a song that hit number 4 in England and should have made it up to number 4 in the United States and the rest of the world, here is Elvis Costello, backed by The Attractions, and I Can't Stand Up for Falling Down. Made the top 4 in England and should have in the United States. That was Elvis Costello with I Can't Stand Up for Falling Down.
Number 3.
Now we're up to our number 3 from way downtown. Back in the early 90s, a band called The Indians released an album on Polydor. The band was made up of singer-songwriter Angelique Bianca from Los Angeles, bassist Chris Miller from England, and lead guitarist Zeb from Italy. In 1992, the Indians caught a break by having two of their songs on the soundtrack to the movie California, a thriller that didn't do so well at the box office. But that exposure led to the Indians' song Bed of Roses being selected for the movie Reality Bites. The soundtrack to that movie was a huge success, selling over 1 million copies and reaching number 13 on the album charts. While Lisa Loeb's single Stay ultimately went to the top of the singles chart and got most of the attention, Bed of Roses by the Indians should have also been a monster hit single. It's our number 3 from way downtown. Here they are, the Indians, with Bed of Roses. From the Reality Bites soundtrack and also from the Polydor album Indianism, those were the Indians with Bed of Roses.
Number two.
Now we are up to number two, which means we are going to play a song by the British band Squeeze that we think should have gone to number one. And quite honestly, on some 80s satellite channels and streaming services, this song is placed in the type of rotation that is usually reserved for huge hits, like number one hits. But in reality, this song was not a hit when it was actually released as a single. It peaked at number 49 in the United States, number 45 in Canada, number 41 in England, and number 90 in Australia. The song that we think should have gone to number one, that was Squeeze with Tempted.
Number one.
Now we are up to our Hall of Perfection track at number one. Sadly, we are turning our attention to a song by the Monkees that we originally planned to feature later this year. You may remember that just last week we told the story of Ian Matthews and Michael Nesmith and their amazing arrangement of the song Seven Bridges Road. Well, while there are quite a number of Monkees-related songs and stories we wish to cover, our intention has been to spread them out over time. Unfortunately, though, this past week, Peter Halston Thorkelson, better known as Peter Tork, passed away at the age of 77. As our tribute to this talented musician, our Hall of Perfection track today is Peter Tork's shining moment of victory.
Several installments ago, I mentioned that the Monkees once had a run of 31 consecutive weeks at number one on the Billboard album charts, when their second album amazingly knocked their first album out of the number one slot. On that first album, the one that spent 13 weeks at number one, Peter Tork had very little involvement. He showed up at the recording sessions for Last Train to Clarksville with a counterpoint that he had arranged, only to be turned away by Cold Jims and told that he wasn't needed. As a consolation, he was allowed to play guitar on a couple of Mike Nesmith compositions thanks to Mike's persistence with the label. On that second album, the one that spent 18 weeks at number one, Peter was given a lead vocal on the song Your Auntie Griselda, which began its existence as a serious rock song in the vein of the Stones' 19th Nervous Breakdown, but was turned into a novelty number in order to match the lovable dummy personality that Peter played on the television show. Well, by their third album, the Monkees had reached the boiling point over the recording process of their records. Through a revolt that was quite risky, they used their popularity as a negotiating tool to take control over their output. They agreed to continue to record songs written by Boyce and Hart and other Screen Gems and Columbia writers, but they demanded the right to select who was playing on those recordings. For that third album, Nesmith, Tork, and producer Chip Douglas did a brilliant job of balancing the expectations of the record-buying public and, at the same time, making a statement about their credibility. Because they liked Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart and loved their songs, three Boyce and Hart compositions were recorded for Headquarters, along with three Nesmith compositions, one song written by Mickey Dolenz, and a beautiful ballad composed by Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil. But the gem of that album was the song that Peter Tork co-wrote with Joseph Richards, a selection that was often called In This Generation, even though that was not its actual title. While it was Peter's song, Mickey sang the lead vocal. In a bit of a switch from their normal instrumentation, Peter played all the guitar parts, including lead, and Mike played an excellent organ part. Producer Chip Douglas played bass while Mickey really did play the drums. Davey, of course, played the tambourine. The band handled their own backing vocals, which were becoming, by that third album, a major component of the Monkees. While the backing tracks of some Monkee records have that L.A. Wrecking Crew sound, and some have the Jeff Berry, Don Kirshner, Brill Building, New York sound, this brilliant Peter Tork song and the recording made of it is what the Monkees actually sound like. I was fortunate enough to meet Peter Tork on one occasion, and I was very happy to tell him personally how much this particular song had always meant to me. I also told him how his performance of CPE Bach's Solfeggietto on live TV had convinced my mother and my aunt, both highly educated pianists, that the Monkees did indeed have actual talent. Peter was very gracious in accepting my compliments, and we chatted for a few minutes about underground music and sports. This was back in 1986, and he told me that he had, earlier that day, attended a minor league baseball game in Memphis. He was excited that he had been able to see Bo Jackson play baseball, and he asked me if I had ever seen a minor league game there in Memphis. After I told him that I had, he made a remark about the beauty of watching individuals chase a dream, and that that was what appealed to him about minor league baseball. Then he repeated himself saying, quote, "You know, there is beauty inherent in chasing dreams," close quote. Well, back in May of 1967, the Monkees hit number one with their Headquarters album, and then the very next week, the Beatles released Sgt. Pepper. The Monkees slipped to number two, where they remained for 11 weeks, right behind the Beatles. Right there at number two, the Monkees had shown the world, and more importantly, the powers controlling their label, that even without the Wrecking Crew, they weren't far behind the Beatles. And that Peter Tork non-single album cut that became the closing theme to the Monkees TV show? It is our Hall of Perfection track today. Here are, really, the Monkees.
Shine. We were born to love. generation, we will make the world shine. We were born to love one another. This is something we all need. We were born to love one another. We must be what we're going to be. And what we have to be is free. Love is understanding. We gotta be free. Love is understanding. We gotta be free.
With a song that was never released as a single, but surely would have hit number one if it had been. Those were the Monkees with For Pete's Sake. Well, that's all we have for today. Be sure and join us next week at this exact same time in the exact same place for another installment of Alt Universe Top 40. We would love to hear from you, so please visit our website at www.altuniversetop40.com. Those are all lowercase letters, and 40 is a number. Or you can email me at john@altuniversetop40.com. Again, all lowercase letters, and 40 is still a number. Or go to our Facebook page and like our Alt Universe Top 40 Facebook page. You can also hear each episode the following Friday after its original Saturday broadcast on Mixcloud. So until next time, keep making those positive changes that time and taste demand, and keep on smiling through the static.